We're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, three lines from the bottom. We've been discussing about the various kinds of containers that might be used to hold wine that Goyim may have kept wine in, and therefore what are the dinim as far as using them and as far as kashering them and whatever. One distinction we made so far is, which we're going to have as we continue throughout the sugya, is between containers that are used to keep wine long-term versus short-term. And we mentioned briefly yesterday what's the definition of long-term. You have a number of different opinions among the Rishonim. Does it mean 3 days? Does it mean maybe even enough wine for three meals? Does it mean the kind of container that you have a spout to pour out of instead of tipping over the container itself, in which case, for example, like a bottle would not be considered machnisse l'kiyum, it wouldn't be considered something that you use it permanently because you tip it, as opposed to a barrel that would have a spout, let's say, that would have a faucet that you would open, that would be considered machnisse l'kiyum according to that. A different other possibilities, maybe it's one
time limit.
It could be a time limit. It could be the type of container. It could be also a container that's sealed such that oxygen and whatever doesn't get into the wine and spoil it, as opposed to one that's not. So you have a few different understandings of what machnisse l'kiyum versus not is. Anyway, that was one distinction we made so far. What the din is therefore as far as using them, and what kind of kashering needs to be done to them. We mentioned about the idea of milui v'irui, where in some cases you fill them with water, you keep the water in there for 24 hours, pour it out, do that two times more, and that's enough. Other times, as we're going to see in the sugya, other times it's enough to just do shichshuch, which basically means just that you rinse them with water. Okay.
So there's a lot of different types and a lot of different variables.
It's not that there's no conclusion. I mean, there is. There's a lot of machlokas we're showing him on the finer details, but you have these basic parameters. So again, you have the difference between machnisse l'kiyum and not, the containers that are used for long-term storage of wine versus not. You have a difference of the material of the container, as Rashi had mentioned yesterday, that, for example, leather skin bags or whatever don't absorb the wine as readily, whereas earthenware containers do. There's also what they're treated with. We talked yesterday about if they're treated with tar, where tar makes them absorb more.
How do you arrive at a decision?
The bottom line is
integrating all these parameters.
You have to know what kind of container you're dealing with and what the purpose was of it, and then that'll tell you. Then that'll tell you what you have to do with it. So you have there's a few simonim, and in Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeya you have a section of about 20 simonim or so that deals with the dinim of Yayin Nefesh, and within that you have 4 simonim that deal with the kalim, with the utensils that are used with Yayin Nefesh. So one of them deals with a lot of the details that we're dealing with here in our studio. Okay. So Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. So yesterday we learned a Braisa, which in many ways is almost identical to this one, but that one was talking about noidos, which are bags made out of skin or leather or whatever. Here we're going to be talking about kankanim, which are earthenware barrels. So kankanim shall ovik gechavim, kankanim that belong to goyim, chadoshim grudim mutorin, if they're new and they're grudim, they have not had tar applied to them,
mm-hmm.
then mutarin, then they're mutar to use. Yeshonim umutzapafin, but if they're old or if they're treated with tar, then they're lined with tar, then they're asurin. Because again, if they're old, then it means they were used and they absorbed a lot of wine. If they're coated with tar, then that itself makes them absorb. Now Rashi. Understands that even though the wording of this braisa is almost identical to the previous one about noidos, Rashi says there was a difference with noidos before. Chadoshim, when we said they have to be new, doesn't mean they have to never have been used before. Even if they were used once, that's enough. That's still good enough because leather doesn't absorb wine as readily. Rashi just says actually it's not even a question of once. This is yayin zman mur, just having wine in them for a short amount of time. Earlier on the Yom, Rashi says the leather doesn't absorb it, as opposed to clay cheres. Rashi doesn't define, but the point is there is the concept that there's some less
than an hour because it starts absorbing very quickly.
Maybe, but to be that as it may, earthenware containers or even leather ones that are coated with tar will absorb right away. Therefore, no. So that's the point. Rashi says when we said before chadoshim in connection with noidos, it means they could have been used a little bit, just not very much. As opposed to here with kankanim, Rashi says it means they actually have to be completely new. They've actually never been used because otherwise they would start absorbing even right away. that's one of the problems that Tosfos has in this long Tosfos over here that begins on the previous Amud and takes up most of this Amud. One of the problems Tosfos has with Rashi's explanation is why are we changing the meaning of the word Chadoshim from one Braisa to another? And so therefore Tosfos offers, so we discussed yesterday, Tosfos offers various other possibilities that Chadoshim would mean that they would, in both cases, would mean that they would never use, but the difference is, are we talking about that they had tar and then the tar was peeled off? Are we talking about that the,
used means there was...
The problem is, again, as we discussed yesterday, so one possibility we said in Tosfos, the point is, if they're new, the reason why we're saying they're mutter is because then, if any wine had been put into them and they're not lined with tar, you would see that they look different now. Therefore, the very fact that you see they look new implies that no wine has been put into them. So that would be the chiddush of the price there in that case.
But new
would mean literally new, never used.
So if they're new and they were lined with tar, but they haven't been used, what's the
problem? No, that problem is, that's what Tosfos says. The problem. Exactly. Because they're coated with tar, therefore, where they were used with wine, that's one of Tosfos' explanations that you might not realize, exactly, because the tar is going to look black either way. You're not going to realize, right?
That's what?
That it was used for wine. So therefore, the guy may tell you that it's new, but it's not necessarily going to be new. It may have been used. That's the point. That's one of Tosfos' explanations.
But the tar cannot mean it's new.
If it's new, no. As soon as it's manufactured, let's say they coat it with tar because they intend to use it for wine. Then let's say they sold it to you, a Jew, to use it. The problem is, again, according to one explanation in Tosfos, once they're coated with tar, already then there's no way to know whether they were actually used with wine or not. They may well have been used with wine, and you won't know. As opposed to, that's the point of the Braisa, making a distinction between whether they're not coated with tar or whether they are, because if they're not coated with tar, then you see that they're new, they look new, and therefore you have no problem with their coat. Then you can determine whether they're used or not, exactly.
But what's this tar? You cannot.
That's the point. That's what Tosfos
says. So why don't we just say tar means used?
That, because it doesn't necessarily, maybe it was new, the guy is telling you it's new.
That's
the thing, yoshonim almost often means if they're used, if they're not tarred, but they have been used, or if they are tarred, regardless whether they've been used or not, absolutely, then they would be also. That's what we mean, in other words. Yeah. Okay. Continue the Braisa. That's one of Tosfos' understandings. Again, Tosfos brings also another girsa. Tosfos brings another girsa from Rabbeinu Tam. The difference between nodus and kankanim is not so much a matter of the material, but a matter of how long term storage is wine kept in them. In nodus, it's only short term. In kankanim, it's longer term. Therefore you have a difference between them. Okay. Anyway, continues the Braisa. So now if a goy had placed wine into them, so what do? Yisrael noisem osecha mayim. A Jew places water into them. So Rashi understands it to mean that if a goy had used it for wine, so again, it's true that it was used for wine, so now you have a problem. However, it doesn't mean that it's never allowed to be used. Again, we had an our Mishnah that the mayor had said that such things are also b'hanna. The Chachamim disagreed with him. So therefore, there is a way to kasher them, namely the milui v'iri thing that we said yesterday, that you fill it up with water, leave it for 24 hours, pour it out, repeat the same process twice. That's what we mean. Noisim l'seichan mayim means a Jew places water into them, and then that's how he kashers it, by placing water into it three times.
Does it have to be hot water?
No, cold water even. No. Cold water.
Cold water.
Cold water, but I mean, eventually it becomes room temperature, but whatever, yeah. So that's Rashi's explanation of noisim l'seichem mayim. Some other Rishonim have a different understanding, which is that a Yisrael is allowed to put water into such barrels. We're not worried about the little bits of wine that are going to come out from the sides of the container and be absorbed into the water, because noisim tamlich gam. It doesn't give it a good flavor. It gives it like an off flavor, and such a thing is mutter. Okay. Another din. Ovid gechavim noisim l'seichem yayin. What if, again, a goy put wine into these containers? Yisrael noisim l'seichem tzirumuyas. Then a Jew can put into them tzir, which is umuyas, which are different kinds of fish juices, which we're going to deal with later on. Tzir is basically they pickle fish in water, salt, or whatever, and then you have it's fish juice. So tzir is basically the natural juices of the fish themselves. Muyas is more, I said it wrong. Tzir is more or less the natural juices of the fish themselves after they've been sitting in a barrel or whatever, and you press them out and you get juice out of them. Muyas is more that you pickle them in water, salt, or whatever, and then you press them out and you get out. Also, you got a lot of the fat of the fish into it, which we're going to deal with later. So then you're allowed to do that, but in a choshesh, and there's no problem. So again, Rashi understands it to mean that you're allowed to put in siru murias, and there's no problem because the sharpness of them will overcome the wine, and therefore you don't have an issue with the wine taste. That's what
the taste.
Yeah. Again, other Rishonim understand that what it means is the same way as we said you can do milui v'iru with water. By the same logic, you can put in them siru murias, and that is also a valid method of kashering them because the siru, the murias, will overcome, will take away the taste of the wine because the sharpness of it really.
Does the salt like take out the wine? I mean,
it neutralizes it. Let's say it neutralizes neutralizes the taste of the wine, and therefore. So now we have a question. What do we mean when we say Yisrael noisam l'secham mayim and Yisrael noisam l'secham siru murias? The question is, do we mean, actually it actually says we're referring specifically to siru murias. Do we mean that a Jew is allowed to put siru murias into these containers and there's no problem? Or do we mean, b'dievet, if he put it in, then it's not also. L'chatchila would mean that goy use these containers, these kankanim for wine. You are now l'chatchila allowed to put sirin murias into it, and afterwards use that sirin murias for food. Or are we saying you shouldn't do it l'chatchila? L'chatchila you should be kashering them with milui v'iri, filling them up with water and pouring it out three times over 3 days. But if the b'yevin you put in sirin murias, then you can use them also. And again, according to the other explanation that we're talking about using siru murias as a method of kashering him, same idea. Is it l'chatchila you could use that, or is it b'dieved? The better thing to do would be to kasher them the proper way, but if you decide to kasher them with siru murias, is that also acceptable?
What would be the difference? Why would have
it? It's useful to know. L'chatchila.
What's the problem that it's less good?
Because, the gusta that we have in front of us, Yisrael Noisim L'Soichon, seems to imply that L'Hachila he can do it. So in fact, we've shown him point out a different gusta over here, something along the lines of Yisrael Shenosam L'Soichon, Tzura Muyas, Enei Choshesh, which could mean more that it's more B'dievet. Yeah.
I don't see the difference between B'dievet and...
What do you mean you don't see the difference? If a person comes to a Rav and asks, can I put Tzura Muyas in this container, what should the Rav tell him?
We said initially that there's one way to do it, which is to put water.
But now we're at
That's
the question. Now that we have a braisa that mentions siru murias, does that mean that works?
Maybe
it does. Maybe because after all, the gusa that we have in front of us is Yisrael noisim l'secham siru murias. A Jew can put siru murias into it, but in a choshesh and not worry about it, implying maybe l'chatchila. Toshma, come, we'll prove a braisa. We'll bring a braisa. The Tanya of Zvid bar Oshia, Halateach kankanim in a Ovik Echavim, if a person buys barrels from Goyim, Chadoshim, if the barrels are new, Noisim L'Sechon Yayin, no problem. He can put wine into them right away, there's no problem. Yeshonim, if the barrels are old, they've already been used, Noisim L'Sechon, Tzirah Muriyas, L'Chatchila. Then L'Chatchila, he can put Tzirah Muriyas into them. Again, according to Rashi, not for purposes of kashering them, but just that afterwards to store Tzirah Muriyas in them, and afterwards he can use it. And according to the other Rishonim, that it means that he's able to, that just as much as you can use milui v'iri of water, just as much you can kasher them by putting in Tzirah Muriyas. Interesting question that a couple of the Rishonim bring up is what happened to Ein Mevatel Issur L'Chatchila. If you have an Issur in these barrels, how are you able to be Mevatel it by putting in Tzir? And they give a couple of answers, including you have so little issur. There's a concept in halacha. Ein mevatel issur l'chatchila. When you have something that's osur, if the dievet, it gets mixed in with things that are mutter, and you have 60 times as much heter as issur, then it's allowed, but you're not allowed to do that l'chatchila. If you have, let's say, for example, you know, you have a drop of milk falls into a pot full of meat. So you have, depending on the exact circumstances, it's batel b'shishim. What if you don't have? What if the amount of milk that fell in is 1/50th of the amount of meat? If it ended up that afterwards more meat fell in there, and now you have 60 times as much as the milk, then fine. But you're not l'chatchila allowed to put in allowed to pour more meat into to put more meat into there to be mevatel the milk.
Right.
So why should he be allowed to put in siru murias over here to be mevatel the wine?
Well, first of all, we have a suffix here. We don't know.
Why is it a suffix? No, these are yishanim.
They're used in a way that's not kosher.
If it's used for goyish of wine, then it's a given that it was not kosher. The goyish of wine, by definition, is not kosher.
This yayin that it's talking about, I don't know if it was said before this already, this yayin shalat of chavim, is it only Yainesach, or is also...
No, Sam Yainam we're talking about. But yeah. even if it's Sam... No, but hold on. Even if it's Sam Yainam, so okay, we don't know whether they did Nisach for it. You still have an Issur D'Rabbanan in it because of... You still have an Issur D'Rabbanan in it because of Chasnus, because of Bnei Seyem, because we don't want... Because we don't want too much socialization with Goyim, which could lead to intermarriage.
But then the barrel is empty. How are you going to have Chasnus in a no barrel?
Because you have a barrel which contained wine that belonged to Goyim, where there's Issur in the walls of that barrel. Fine, that's the question.
There
so now...
Costness,
never mind that. The point is the wine that's in the walls of that barrel on the face of it is also, how are you allowed to mail it to kasher it? Okay, of course you can kasher it. The question is, if we're saying you can put in Sirur Murias to store and then it's mevatel the wine, how are you allowed to do that? So they talk about various possibilities, including one is you have so little taste in there that's not really considered being mevatel it. There's also the idea you're allowed to use it just in the normal way. The normal way is you use barrels to store things. So it's not like you're...
Almost no wine.
No, but that's not the point. So the point is, it's not so much that... So that's one idea, right? There's very little wine there, right? The other idea is, because you're not doing it in order to be mevatel the issur, you're doing it because you want to store. You want a barrel to store Tzirur Murias in. It happens to be that it's mevatel the issur, that's not such an issue.
So other than that reason, you would not be...
In general, you're not allowed to be mevatel issur, yeah.
Is buying these barrels in the first place Bidyavid?
No, not necessarily.
You don't have to look for other barrels.
Rapasha is not there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Rabbi Huda Nesiyah Mirav Ami. Rabbi Huda Nesiyah asked Rabbi Ami as follows. So we talked before about this Milui V'Irui, filling them up with water and emptying it out. We talked just now about Sir and Murias. What about another possibility? What if you take these earthenware barrels and you put them back in the kiln where you have like this pottery to begin with when it's made, it's put in an oven and they bake it over there. So now what if you put it back in the oven and rebake it?
Like Libun, basically.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Kasher it?
Yeah, as far as kashering it, would that work? Omalei, said Abami, says, of course, Sir Soda, Ur Le Koshakin. If Sir even were saying burns away if even Sir a fish burns away the Issur in it, how much more so actual fire would?
Right.
Okay. Itzmar Nami, and in fact, they said also a discussion of Amiroyim about this. Amr of Yechanan, Va'amilo Amr of Asi, Amr of Yechanan. Yes, Kankanim shall over to Kachavim Shech Ziron Lakivshana Esh. If you take barrels, earthenware barrels that belong to Goyim, and you put them back in the furnace to rebake them, and remember, these barrels, as we said before, are usually coated with tar. How do we know when they've reached a high enough temperature? The tar is on the inside of the barrel. Kiven shenoshra zifts on mehen mutarin. As soon as the tar comes off the barrel, then it's mutter because then we know that the inside of the barrel has reached a high enough temperature that you have that libun has been effectively accomplished. And Omer Ravashi, and Ravashi says, actually, loitema ad nosron. You don't necessarily have to even say that you have to wait until literally the tar falls off. El afilu rafoi mirpa. Even if the tar has just gotten softened, afal gabdalei notav, even if it didn't actually fall off, because the heat is taking place on the outside, you put it back into the furnace. Never mind that. The point is the heat is taking place on the outside of the barrel. If you have that the inside has gotten hot enough, that the tar is getting softened over there, then you know the inside of it has gotten hot enough that you have an effective kasher. Actually, I mean, here we're talking about in connection with wine. One thing that makes wine different than most other kinds of Isurim, Shabbat Torah, is because usually we only talk about kashering things that absorb typhus or whatever through heat. Here we're talking about the wine is cold. Therefore, we have a little more leeway over here. If it were to be a keli that was used for cooking trefa meat or what have you, not necessarily would it work like that.
But does cooking get rid of that? If the tar has already absorbed this wine, so they're heating it up, get rid of the wine that's inside the tar?
Apparently, it burns it up, yeah. Yeah.
What about if it's a barrel made of ceramics?
Ceramics is basically the same thing as earthenware. If you can't heat it, that's okay. So that's the next thing we're going to talk about as far as heating it from the inside. That's the next thing the Gemara is going to talk about over here. Wait. Okay, kinsa. So now what happens, what about the other way around? What if instead of putting it back into the furnace to rebake it, instead you decide to put pieces of wood inside to heat it up from the inside?
Kinsa is wood?
Kinsa literally means pieces of wood, yeah. Kismin doken the sefer kankan, Rashi says. If you put burning sticks of wood into the kankan, ad shenoshu zipsoi, until the tar comes off, is that good enough? Pligibar of Acha Rabin. So now Rav Acha...
Like a torch, basically.
Yeah, sort of like blowtorching it from the inside, yeah. So Pligi bar of Acha and Ravina. So now Rav Acha and Ravina argue on that point. Is it does it work or not? Chad also Chad Shori. One says it's also, one says it's mutter. The Hilchasa commander also. Now the halacha is like the one who says it's also. Which, by the way, Mephoshim point out the reason why it's not that usual for the Gemara to point out in the Machlokas Amidoyim who the halacha is like. The reason why it has to do it over here, Tosfos actually says, the reason is because usually we have a rule, whenever we have a machlokas between Ravina and Ravashi, usually the halacha is like whichever one is makel. Most of the time it's Ravina. In three cases it's Rav Acha, who's makel. Either way, no, Ravina and Rav Acha b'reid Rava. Usually that's the rule that the Gemara sets up, that when we have a machlokas between them, between Rav Acha b'reid Rava and Ravina, usually the halacha is like whichever one of them is makel. Most of the time the one who's makel is Ravina. There are three places in the Torah where it's Rav Acha is makel. And in all cases, it's like whichever one of them is makel. Here, unusually, we're passing something like the one who's machmer among them. That's why the Gemara needed to point that out. Okay, so now what's the reason? Why should it be osur if you're heating it up from the inside? So Rashi says the logic is like this. If you're heating it up from the outside and you're saying now the inside got hot enough for the tar to start dissolving or whatever, okay, well, obviously that means it's got hot enough on the inside. But over here, if you're heating it up on the inside, well, of course, the tar is going to start coming off right away, even if it's not a high enough temperature, because you're doing it right there where the tar is. So what good does it do? So therefore, you'd need to do it from the outside.
Because
again, if you're doing it from the outside and then you see the tar on the inside is getting softened, then you know the inside has gotten hot enough. If you put the heat source on the inside and the tar starts softening, that doesn't show you got it to a high enough temperature.
Because
of course the tar
is the whole barrel.
The concern
is
the tar
and
the barrel
and
itself. Right. So if you see the tar is starting to melt, fine. What good does that do?
If you do it from the inside, you won't know whether or not you took all the areas off. If you do it from the outside, then you can know exactly all the areas that you've heated.
Okay, I mean, if you're filling up the whole inside with hot things on the face of it.
It's wood, no.
No. What kind of wood? We're talking earthenware coated with tar.
Yes, earthenware coated with tar.
Right.
You put hot wood.
The fire presumably would reach everywhere. But again, the problem is that all you show is you got the fire hot enough to melt the tar. You don't show that you got the fire hot enough to actually kasher the keli itself, to actually burn out the wine that was embedded in the keli itself. Now, Tosfos discusses actually further. Tosfos says, okay, based on what Rashi is saying, it would come out. And what if, for example, you were to heat it up enough that if there were to be tar on the outside of it, it would melt on the face of it? That ought to be good enough, no? Because by the same logic, you're heating it from the inside, and you see the tar is melting on the outside. Tosfos says, actually, no. That's true, but nevertheless, the point is you want to make sure the entire thickness of the keli gets hot. Anyway, Tosfos says that wouldn't work because you have a concern, what you were just mentioning about ceramics. You have a similar concept with klei cheres. You have a connection in Pesachim, it talks about in connection with kashering them for Pesach, that you have a problem. You have a problem when you have something where the person is likely to not allow it to get hot enough because he's afraid it's going to break. So we have certain kinds of kalim for Pesach. Right. That's the point, in other words. So you have certain kinds of kalim where in principle, for example, where to kasher them properly, you need libun, let's say, but you're not going to because if you tried to do libun on them, then they would break. And the same thing with Hagalah, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch. It gives an example. For example, you have, it's not very common nowadays, but in the old days, you had, for example, knives where the handle and the blade were attached together with glue. You're not going to kasher them if you try to do Hagalah on them. You're not going to allow the water to boil to get 212 because then they're you won't have anything left. So what are you going to inevitably do? You're going to end up you're not going to let the water get hot enough to melt the glue. Well, then that's not hot enough for Hagalah. So therefore, such knives can't be kashered. So this is a similar concept over here. Since if you were to heat up a container from the inside hot enough that it would conceivably melt any tar that was on the outside, you wouldn't because it would break. Then therefore we don't trust you to do that basically, and therefore if you're going to return it to the kibshon, if you're going to put it back in the kiln in the furnace and rebake it, fine. But if you're going to try to put wood or whatever on the inside, then Tosfos says that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I put it in the water,
you go. So then in that case, it's questionable by kashering them then, because if the people are going to get upset, then it means that it may not actually get kashered properly. Yeah. 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 Okay. All right. Okay, so that's the story as far as kin. That's fine. Iboilu, who now we have another question.
So what's the conclusion?
So that's the conclusion is that it's also to do it that way. It's also, again, for Rashi's point is just that if all you did is you got it hot enough to melt the tar on the inside, that's not enough. Tosfos adds the point that even if it were hot enough to melt the tar on the outside, it would still be also because not necessarily are you going to make sure to do a thorough job of it because you're afraid it's going to break.
And on the inside?
So therefore, therefore you can't do it from the inside. Therefore,
since
you can't do it from the inside because you're afraid it's going to break, therefore doing it from the inside is not a valid method of kashering it. So you can do you can do milui v'irui. You fill it with water and empty it out 3 times. Each time the water stays in there for 24 hours. You can use siru murias, as we said before, because there's a saltiness and the sharpness of them or whatever burns away and neutralizes the taste of the wine. Sir and murias are different kinds of fish juices. Sir is basically just fish juice as it is, and murias is where they pickle the fish and what?
It's like pulling in the
taste. Yeah, pulling kind of burns away is the expression Rashi uses because they're very salty. They're very salty liquids, so they burn away the wine.
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. Okay. So I guess it's a similar concept. Yeah. All right. Fine. Now another question.
So we answered the question.
No. The lachatchila and b'diavad was before, but Sirin Murius. We established you can do that lachatchila.
You can.
Now we said about putting them back in the furnace. We said that's allowed,
right.
But to try and burn them out from the inside,
right.
That not. Right. Okay. Iboilahu. Maulitim l'secha sheikhar. What about are you allowed to put beer inside such a keli that was bought from Goyim? Well, so you have a few different explanations among the Rishonim. One is, again, it's a question of can we say that beer has the same effect as Sir and Murius? Maybe it also neutralizes the taste of the wine enough to be a valid method of kashering.
It won't destroy
the wine that's embedded in the tar over there. So maybe, or maybe we're not talking about tar and kalim, whatever. But so the point is, one way of looking at it is the beer that they had in those days, especially that had a bitterness to it from the hops, as we said the other day, that they put into it. Maybe that's enough to neutralize the wine. Another way of looking at it is, are we concerned if you're allowed to put in beer in there, are you going to mistakenly think that you can also put wine in there? And that, of course, would be a problem. There's a few different understandings of what exactly the issue would be. Okay. Anyway. Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda asked me, but Rav Ashori. So Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda say it's Osir, Rav says it's Mutter. And in fact, Ravina Shorolei L'Rav Chia Breder of Yitzchak L'Mirma Beishich, right? Ravina one time gave a heter to Rav Chia Breder of Yitzchak to put beer into such a keli that had previously been used for wine of Goyim. Also, Roma Bechamra, instead Rav Chia Breder of Yitzchak went and put wine in there. So you would think, well, maybe now we should have to be Goyzer, because if you see that somebody made such a mistake, maybe you need to be Goyzer, not to be allowed to put beer in there, because you may come to put wine. Nevertheless, Ravina wasn't concerned about that. He didn't find it necessary to make such a gzera. Omar, he said, okay, it's a happenstance thing. It's a one-time thing that happened. It's not going to be a usual thing that if you're allowed to put beer in there, that you're going to come instead to put wine in there, and therefore we can still stick with the din that Rava said that you're allowed to. Again, either that you're allowed to, and it will be a valid method of kashering the keli, and now in the future you can use it for wine. Or that you can put beer in there and later on drink that beer and not have to worry about the taste of the wine in there because the taste will have been neutralized and it's nice and palm with gum.
Right.
So yeah. No, again, remember we're talking about here about Yain Nesef where it only absorbs it where it's cold when it absorbs it. There's a big difference between that and other kinds of trefes which are absorbed with heat. When it's absorbed with heat, then you don't have then there's none of these things. Then you don't have any of these things. Then you need proper hagala or libun as the case may be. Yeah. Okay.
this beer would also have to be for 24 hours, the same process as water. Like,
so I think some of them, I think some of them approach and say just that. That yeah, if we're not necessarily would you need three times Müller Beery with it, but at least you would have to have that it stays in there enough time to neutralize the wine. Yeah. Okay. Another case. Rabbi Yitzchok bar Bisna havele hanhu money de pakusna. Rabbi Yitzchok bar Bisna had certain kalim made of pakusna, which previously had been used for goyish wine. Pakusna, Rashi says, means that these are kalim that are made out of animal dung. So they had, the same way as they could take clay and bake it
animal
to make
dung?
Animal dung. The same way as you have...
Kalim from that?
Yes, the same as you have in a number of places in Chaff that actually mentioned something called clay glolim, which is just that. Usually they're not even a kapal tumah, but the same way as you can take clay and shape it and make kalim out of it and bake them, the same way they could use animal dung for the same purpose. So that's how Rashi explains. No, it could be from kosher or treif animals, doesn't matter. If it's dung, if it's with waste from the animal, if it's soya from the animal, doesn't matter. Yeah. Anyway, that's Rashi's explanation of what these kalim were made out of. You have a few other explanations. Rabbi Hanano brings one possibility is that they're made from a kind of wood called ta'ashur. A couple of different explanations. What money de pakusna are. Whatever it is, he had such kalim. Now, he needed to do milui v'iri on them, as we said before, fill them up with water and pour it out after every 24 hours. He figured to go one better. Malinhu maya, he filled them up with water, and chinhu b'shimsha, and he put them out in the sun, because he figured maybe it's not good enough for it to be room temperature water, maybe the water has to be warmer.
That's what I was on.
Poku, and what ended up happening is these kalim split, they split open, they broke. Amalei of Abba, so Rav Abba says to him, look at this, asachinu alochi, surah deloilam, look at this, you made them also to yourself forever, in the sense, in other words, you did too much of a good thing, kind of, you should have just listened, you should have just followed what the Chachamim say, you don't have to go the extra mile. Eimu de'omer abonon mamlinu maya. Yes, the Chachamim say that you have to fill them up with water. Anuchi b'shimshem yomer. They never said anything about putting them in the sun. So you did that. That's your problem. Now you're never going to be able to use these kalim because they broke. So next time, don't try to be more frum than necessary, basically. You do the appropriate method of kashering, which in this case is just milui v'iri with room temperature water, and you're good. Don't try to come up with new chachamim.
Unless you're in Russia.
Unless you're in Russia.
It's not very hot.
Okay.
They didn't have water.
No, you could boil. Of course they had. You could boil up water. Now, in this case, he figured he broke the keli. Yeah, because this kind of keli, a pakusna, whatever it is, whether it's a kind of wood or whether it's clay glolim or whatever. The point is, it's not made to take that kind of hot water. Yeah.
But you do it in Russia, not in Israel.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Another din. Amar of Yusna, Amar of Abi. Klin neser emoy taro elomim. A keli made out of neser, which the Gemara is going to define in a second what it is. Can never become tahor from yayin nesach, because such kalim absorb a lot of wine, much more even than clay cheres. Regular clay cheres absorb a certain amount. These clay nesach absorb even more than that. Some of the Rishonim actually learn that it doesn't mean completely that there's no way of kashering them. We're going to talk soon in the Gemara about that one other thing, besides all these methods of kashering that we've discussed so far, you also have a concept that you can leave it unused for 12 hours, not 12 hours, sorry, 12 months, for 12 months, and then it's completely dried out, and then it's also mutter, because anything that was absorbed in is long since dried out. Yeah. What? No, again, you have the Rishonim who learn, you have the Chacham Tzvi, I think, mentioned in one of his Truvas, that you have such an opinion that it applies to other kinds of Tereses as well. He says, in general, the poskim don't accept such a thing, but he says, well, you need it as a sniff, where you need it as an extra thing to be master a certain case, then maybe you can add such a detail also. But in general, again, we're talking specifically as far as Yain Nessa.
Not
necessarily like plates or other things, right.
Why don't we make a distinction here? We said before that if the wine spoils to such a point that it's no longer, you know, useful, it's no longer good, so it wouldn't be a problem anymore. Why don't we make a distinction?
Because we actually said in the Mishnah that that doesn't apply if the wine spoiled while it was in the hands of the goy. That we said in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to use vinegar of goyim where they themselves were turned to vinegar while it was in their possession. Because once it was also as yayin nesach, it can't become mutter by turning into vinegar. If you have, we're talking about when you have wine of a Jew that became vinegar, that spoiled to the extent that it's vinegar, and now a goy touches it, then you don't have an issue because there's no issue of nisuch and no issue of kasnus and what have you. But like vinegar, it's not a problem. Right. Because when it was in the hands of the goy before it turned into vinegar, he could have used it for nisuch. Yeah. Right. So that I mentioned a few days ago when we began this sugya that Rashi mentions later in the Masechta, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that Amar brings it as an opinion in Shulchan Aruch that nowadays where the goyim in general are not menasef, then maybe the wine is not also b'hanah. Maybe it's only also to drink. To drink,
it's
still
the same as it was.
Right? In some countries, maybe, and by and large, the goyim nowadays don't pour out wine on. Yeah.
But I mean, in India they do.
In India they do all kinds of weird things. I don't know that they necessarily pour wine in honor of Ovechkin. What? They pour champagne in honor of Ovechkin?
No, about the sport. You see them.
Oh come on! I know they make a stickle of a dessert of course, but that's not. Yeah. Okay. All right.
So when they have new shape also, you know that.
Yeah. Okay. You know, they also pour Gatorade on the winning coach, you know, and we don't say that Gatorade is also... yeah. All right. Okay, onward. Yeah. Anyway, so you have some Rishonim, I think that Ivan mentioned, that maybe when we say that these clay nets are aimed like Tadai Lomas, it just means you can't do Milu V'iru. You can't use any of these other... I mean, you can't use Hagalah or Libun or what have you, but you could leave them for 12 months. Other Rishonim disagree with that as well. Okay. Anyway, my...
12 months?
Even 12 months, I would say, is not good enough. It's not good. My clay nester, what exactly are clay nester? Because they absorb so much that even after 12 months, it's still considered significant. When you use them again, then still it absorbs so much to begin with. My clay nester, what is the definition of clay nester? Omra b'yoti ba'oven, clay machpores shel tzrif. These are kalim made from the type of earth from where they mine tzrif. Srif is a material in English, it's called alum. It's a chemical compound of aluminum and sodium, and I forget what else or whatever. But even now, I think they have certain medicinal and other uses for it. Kalim that are made from that kind of earth absorb a lot. Tosfos points out that actually there are a few different types of clay. That's the point. It's porous, and therefore it absorbs a lot, right? Tosfos points out that actually in Gemara terminology, we have a few different kinds of nether. There's this kind that they make kalim from. There's another kind mentioned elsewhere in Shach, which is more similar to clay cheret. There's a third kind that's used as a detergent. Nether, to a certain extent, nether is related to the word nitrogen, so it's some kind of compound that contains the word that contains nitrogen and a nitre or whatever. So there can be different kinds. Okay. Anyway, okay. Here's a case involving kalim of that were used for yain nether. Devei parzik rufila onatani kuvi mukumadisa. The household or the attendants or whatever of Parzak the viceroy, so he was the viceroy of the king of Persia. His people, Onas Hani Kuvim Kumbadisa, they stole some containers that were used for wine from Kumbadisa. Roma Buhucham, and as we'll see in a second in the Gemara, Kuvi are containers that are not used for long term storage of wine. They're just used for short term. We discussed before what exactly long-term versus short-term is, the different opinions, but whatever it is, kuvi don't fit in the category of long-term. So that roma b'hu chamra, they use them, they put wine in them, adrinu ni'alayu, and then they return them. That kind of thing was a common thing in those days, by the way, that the government would have, they need something, let's say, for a dinner party or whatever, so, you know, they demand it, you know, they demand, you give it to them, and then they use it, and then they return it. Yeah. You find such things in the Gemara in various places as far as... Yeah, that's what we're You find such things in various other places in shops. They do that. You have involved Matia talks about them doing it with donkeys, for example, where a royal personage or whatever has need of a donkey for short term. So he takes somebody's donkey who's going along the road over there, and then returns the same later on. So this is the same similar kind of thing. Okay. Also Shailul of Yehuda. So they came to ask Rabbi Yehuda, what do we do with these kuvi? What do we do in order to capture them so we can use them again? Omar, so he said, these kuvi, even though they're made out of earthenware, they're not, and therefore they absorb, they're not something that's used for long-term storage of wine. Therefore, all you need is mashashach and b'mayin v'hen mutarin. Therefore, all you need to do is rinse them with water, and they're good, and they're mutter. So now, unlike the other ones we were talking about before, the kankanim or whatever, where you need milui v'irui, where you need to fill them 24 hours with water and then spill it out and do that twice over, here all you need to do is rinse them out. Another din says Rav Avira, Hani chatzvi shchimi d'armoi, these red barrels, red or reddish or brownish or whatever barrels, darmoi of goyim, kiven de lebali tufa, since they do not absorb very much, the type of clay that they were made from, even though it's earthenware, is not the type that absorbs very much. Therefore, also mashashach on the mayim mutarim. All we need to do is rinse them with water, and they're mutar. Are we talking about long term or short term? That's another discussion among the rishonim. Amar Rapapi, and Rapapi says a similar din. Hani pasvasa debe michti, the clay cheres. Again, pasvasa is a name of some kind of keli. From Bay Michti, the name of a place. Kivin de Lebali Tuva, again, these things also do not absorb very much. Same thing, the Shashachan Ramayim Mutarin. Same thing, all you have to do is rinse them with water and then they're mutter. So Rabbi Hanano points out, as far as both of them, they're not machnis on the kiyum. You only use them short term. So therefore, because of that, and they're not made from this nether or whatever that absorbs a lot, therefore all you need to do is rinse them out. Okay, what about kasi? Now we have to ask, what about cups? So again, it's not used lakium. It's not used lakium. You don't keep wine in cups for a very long time. So what's the din with them? Rav Asi osur, Rav Ashi shari. Rav Asi says they are osur unless they're kashered with milui v'iri. And Rav Ashi would say they're mutter. So the scenario is like this. How many times were they used? If we're talking about the very first time after they were made, a goy used them the first time, then everybody would agree it's also because when they're first made and then they're first fired, they're still a little bit soft, and in particular they haven't absorbed anything yet. So therefore, when they're going to absorb, they're going to absorb as much as possible. In other words, typically you're talking about, you have kalim that are used, they've been used before, and now they're being used again. How much more are they going to absorb? They already absorbed a substantial amount. There's only so much more that there's room for them to absorb. Here, these are new, so therefore they're going to absorb a lot. So therefore, if a goy used them the very first time, then therefore you definitely need milui v'iri. Everybody would agree to that, both Rav Asi and Rav Ashi.
The longer you wait, the less they absorb.
Well, so in other words, ki pligi b'pam sheni. The machloikus would be, rather, if the second time that they were used was by a goy drinking wine with them. In other words, you could have, for example, these kalim, these cups. You could have, let's say, the first time he used them, he drank wine with them or something else. So then most of what they absorbed will have been, water, let's say, or something else, which is mutter. So then most of what they'll absorb will have been that. Now afterwards, he uses them a second time, uses them for wine. Fine, but they're not going to absorb very much wine because mostly they've already absorbed water or whatever. It makes a difference. That's what we're saying. So that's the machloitis. So therefore, Rav Asi will still say, nevertheless, they still need milui v'iri. And Rav Ashi will say, in that case, they don't. In that case, it's enough to just be mashasha for them. Because again, it's not machmit and makiyum. You don't use them for long-term storage. They didn't absorb very much. They didn't absorb very much. But that's the point because
mashu or it's a certain amount.
But that's the thing with mashashachon. Obviously, you need to rinse them in order to get out that little bit.
Yeah.
But okay. So that would be the machloikas. Ikadamri. Another version is rather that the machloikas is pam rishon v'sheni to kulam le'tligidaster. If the goy used them for wine the first time they were used or the second time they were used, then according to the second version, everybody would agree it's also ki pligi b'pam gimel. The machloikas would be if only the third time that these cups were used was for wine. Then even so, Rav Asi would still say it's also, and he still made milui v'iri, and Rav Asi would say that not.
These are cases where you knew for sure what it was used for, right?
Right. The hilchasa and the bottom line halacha pam rishon v'sheni also gimel mutter. The halacha is like that second version, like Rav Ashi in that second version. That if he used it for wine the first two times, it's also. If he used it for wine only the third time or onward, then all you need is to rinse them. Now all that is how Rashi learns this. Tosfos points out that later on, towards the end of the Masechta, when we talk about the dinim, about kasher and kalim that are used in wine presses, then you have other dinim over there. So Tosfos has a different understanding over here. We're not talking about how many times the kalim was used. The question is, how many times you need to rinse them in order to kasher them? Is it enough to do it pam rishon is enough, or do you need two times, or do you need three times? So the first version of the Gemara was one time is definitely not enough. You need at least two. And according to, and the second version was two is definitely not enough. You need, according to Rav Ashi, three. And the halacha would be that you need three.
I understand.
That's according to Rav Ashi. That's according to Rav Ashi. According to Tosfos, it doesn't matter how many times the goyim use them. Because according to Tosfos, again, since we're talking about over here, they're not used for long-term storage. They're not machnisim lakiyum. Therefore, you don't need milui v'iri. That would only be for barrels and things like that are used for machnisim lakiyum. So therefore, definitely all you need over here is some kind of rinsing. The question is, how many times do you need to rinse? Right. The question is, how many times do you need to rinse them? Because the more times you rinse them, the more you're getting out, the more you're getting out of them. So what we mean is, if you rinse them twice, that's not enough. But by the time you rinse it three times, then already you got everything out of it. Tosfos, by the way, brings, you know, we're coming up to Purim now. Tosfos brings in this connection from the Medrash on Esther on Megillas Esther, or actually in Targum Sheni, whatever, where it describes over there, you have it at great length, where it describes Haman's accusations to Achashverosh against the Jewish people, and he mentions one thing. He says to Achashverosh, I want you to understand how little the Jewish people think of you. If a fly falls into a Jew's cup, okay, he'll throw out the fly and drink the rest of the cup. If you, your majesty, were to touch a cup of theirs, they would throw out the whole thing, and not only that, they'd rinse out the cup three times.
So, he knew
his stuff, yeah. Yes, so that's Targum Sheni. Targum Sheni brings it on the Megillah Esther, brings a whole bunch of other things that,
They thought it was about them,
obviously. Well, it is to a certain extent, because of the Ayin Nefta, but yeah. They tell a story about somebody, I can't remember who, but somebody who was Makurav Lamalka, some yid who was close to the government, who was in such a situation involving wine that the king had touched or something. Well, what is he supposed to do? He takes the, in those times, you know, they didn't have napkins necessarily, they had strigel bowls, they had that bowl of water in front of you, sort of like Mayim Achronim, to rinse your fingers between courses or whatever, to get off the grease and whatever. So the yid takes the finger bowl of the king and drinks it. And even though it's got all the grease and all the disgusting, and he explains to the king, you should understand, I have nothing against drinking, I have nothing in person, you know, to prove, it's not that I'm afraid of your germs or what have you, it's halacha.
No tuma either, right? It's like he doesn't have to worry about the tumas.
No risk of
Mayim Achronim. No, the Mayim Achronim, he doesn't have to worry about the tumas.
Right.
Of the, you know, the Goyish king.
Okay. All right. Onward. So that's the story. Then the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is I don't remember. I read it a long time ago. That's why I can't remember the details. I only thought of it now in connection with this. But yeah. Anyway, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, it brings both Rashi's understanding and Tosfos' understanding of different understanding. And in fact, a number of the Meforshim say that Rashi's explanation of it seems to be more straightforward. Yeah. You could with milui v'iri. Again, No. We're talking about earthenware cups. Earthenware. What? Ordinarily you can't. But again, cold versus hot. You're used to thinking of kashering in terms of hot things. You were talking cold things. Yeah.
It's absorption.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go on.
Let me ask a question. Yeah. A barrel of metal, the ones we use today. There's no question. You can. What do you do?
So again, I mean, you would need milui v'iri, probably. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Omer of Zvid. Hani money de kunya. Now what about, okay, till now we've been talking about plain earthenware kalim, or they might be coated with tar or whatever. How about if they're glazed? So Rashi understands that kunya means that they are coated with lead on the inside.
Lead.
They used to in those times. They didn't know that lead is dangerous for you. It was a common thing. It's a known thing.
They warm the lead and then...
They would melt lead and pour it on the inside of the thing again to make it... That's what we're talking about. So that's how Rashi learned.
Make it like stronger?
Probably make it more waterproof. I don't know, whatever. Maybe also, yeah. Tosfos mentions on the basis of a Gemara elsewhere that kunya doesn't necessarily mean that. Tosfos learns that it means glazing with glass. But Tosfos uses the expression "klis chukus shalemis bashel kol tzorkei," glass that has not been completely baked. Like, yeah, okay, whatever it is, that's money de kunya. So, what's the din with that? chivra v'uchma shari, if they're black or if they're white, then if the keli itself is black or white, so they're made from a black clay or a white clay, then they're shari, then they're allowed with the same kinds of dinim that we said until now. Yeruka osur. On the other hand, if they're greenish, then it's osur. Mishum de mitzrif, because the greenish color of the keli implies that it was made from a from clay that had alum in it. And we established before by clay nester that clay that contains alum in it absorbs a lot. It's much more porous. It absorbs. Therefore, it's osur. So therefore, you can't use these milu v'iri things on it. The fact that you have kunya on it, doesn't really help. The clay itself absorbs a lot.
Kunya is
we just said Rashi says kunya means that it's lined with lead, and Tosfos says with glass.
Glass doesn't absorb.
But that's why Tosfos mentions the expression shalom is bashal called tsoke, that it wasn't fully baked. And besides which, actually, you know what? You have a machlokus between the poskim, which leads nowadays to a difference in menhagim, which inspired him in Ashkenazim, where the glass can be kashered. We Ashkenazim hold that glass is much like earthenware; it can't be kashered. That's negeya as far as Hilchos Pesach. Sfardim hold that adadaba glass doesn't absorb, and therefore all you need to do is clean it thoroughly, rinse it or whatever. So yeah, that relates to the gemara.
Right. Doesn't go inside the thing.
That's fine, but what scientists understand and what halacha understands is not necessarily the same thing. Given that glass is made from sand, you have poskim hold, and that's how we bnei Ashkenaz hold that glass is considered to be like clay cheres. It absorbs. It absorbs, and therefore you have used. So again, here we're talking about cold stuff. You know, elsewhere in chat, we're talking about what's hot. It's different, but it's not earth. Understand, but it's still there's still a certain similarity there. So halacha considers that glass.
You're saying an oven that had glass.
Yeah.
Can be kosher.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cannot.
As far as I know, that's correct.
That just for hot. Just for hot. Right?
Just for hot. Again, cold is different. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so yeah. So again, if the clay is black or white, then it's mutter. Yeruka.
Yeah, so
yeah, but
I can't say anymore.
Okay. To the best of my knowledge, the halacha is that glass can't be cut. Maybe the truth is, I don't know. It might be different as far as Pesach. Maybe when we're machmir by Pesach, because in general when we're machmir with many other things on Pesach, maybe as far as other dinim when we're makel as far as glass, I'm not sure. I believe my understanding is the halacha is that as far as Bnei Ashkenaz is concerned, that glass can't be kashered, period. Except again, we're talking about over here Yai Nesach, which is cold. But if you know differently, then say so. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I work in a place that sometimes they have tefachim,
mm-hmm.
and they kasher because they have two ovens, regular ovens.
Right.
It's mostly not glass.
Mm-hmm.
And you have it's mostly technology. It's very, very, it has steam.
Okay, yeah.
And it's very, very expensive. It's about $60,000. The whole thing,
mm-hmm.
one door is full of glass. And it's so kosher.
I don't know.
Look what you're saying now.
I have no idea.
They kosher it by heat.
Okay. I don't know.
Are you saying you can't
kosher? I don't know.
We didn't say right. Whether or not we can kasher by heat.
No. Here we're talking about kashering them from something cold. But ordinarily when we talk about kashering, we're talking about heat. Usually we say glass absorbs, and like clay cheret, as the Gemara is going to tell us soon, clay cheret cannot be kashered with heat. Except again, by we said before, you can put them back into the furnace and then rebake them, but that's different. But I don't know.
So it's an oven.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily the same thing. Yeah, but they don't put the glass back to the same temperature they did when they manufactured it, otherwise it would melt. Okay, so I don't know. It's something we'd have to look into, I guess. I don't know. All right. Anyway, so the bottom line is, again, with these kalim that are lined with lead or glass, as the case may be, these moni de kunya, it depends what the material of the clay is, whether it's black or white is mutter, but if it's green, which means that it has alum in it, then it means that it absorbs and therefore it's awesome. We just said, because the color tells us what the chemical composition of it is.
So green, because
so green means that it has alum.
Alum is more porous.
Alum is more porous. It absorbs, yeah. That's what we said before. Mishum de mitzri, because it contains tzrif, which is alum, right. The e isbuhu kartufni, continues the Gemara, if these kalim that are coated with lead or glass, if they have cracks in them, kulu asiri, then regardless of the color, they're also, because they're, then they're the earthenware itself absorbs. in this connection, Dorash Marema, Marema one time gave a Dorasha, Kunya, these Kunya Kalim, Ben Uchma, Ben Chivra, Ben Yeruka, Shori. No, whether they're black, white, or green, either way, as far as Yai Nesach is concerned, they're Mutter. So different than Rav Zvid, who was distinguishing according to the color, Marema is saying even if they're green, they're still Mutter because the Kunya, at least the coating, has some effect on it that even if they're green, they don't absorb that much.
We know that every green in alum has to be on.
No, days. That was what it meant. It didn't mean that it was painted green. It meant that the clay was naturally green because it had... Yeah. So the question is, my shnom mechomis for Pesach. In that case, why should it be different than the case of Kalim when it comes to Pesach? Debo minemi marema, namely they asked marema when it comes to kasher and Kalim for Pesach, hani moni de kunya, with these kunya Kalim that were used throughout the year with chomis, maulish to moshe behuva pischa, are you allowed to use them for Pesach? So by kashering them, yuruka loyti boilach, and they continued asking the question that if they're green, then we have no question. Obviously, you can't. Obviously, you can't. The mitzarfi uvali, because since they contain alum, they will definitely absorb. Vasiri, therefore, they're also kiti boilach chivori v'uchmi mai. The question is, if they're white or if the clay is white or black, mai, what would be the din? And again, they continued the question, ki isbu kautufni, if there are cracks in the lining, lo chi boilach, then there's no question, devade bali, then they definitely, the clay definitely absorbs, vatsiri, then they'll be after, ki ti boilach, the she, the question is if they're smooth. So the bottom line, the question is, when it comes to Pesach, if they're black or white clay, coated with kunya, there's no cracks in the coating, can we kasher them and use them on Pesach? By the way, returning for a second to the matter of glass, Tosfos points out at the bottom over here that we find, as far as the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, that the Chachamim made glass to be like earthenware in that regard. Again, so as far as Tumah V'Tahara. So therefore, there's an argument to be said that the same thing holds. Now, Tosfos doesn't elaborate on that. Tosfos says actually that glass doesn't absorb, but here we're just talking about a coating of glass so that could absorb. But again, you have other Rishonim who don't learn that way, who say that the equation between clay cheres and glass goes so far as to say, just like clay cheres absorbs, so does glass. When you're using them with hot foods. Yeah. So again, I don't know as far as the ovens that you're talking about, I obviously they must have some kind of basis. I don't know what it is. I haven't looked in detail into these dinim beyond what we need for our Gemara, so I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I'll have to look it up. Anyway, so the bottom line is, anyway, back to the Gemara. The question was, on the one hand, Marema is saying that when it comes to Yayin Nesach, regardless of the color of the keli, it's allowed. Whereas as opposed to when it came to Pesach, they asked him what's the deal, and they said the green ones are the ones with cracks in them we know are definitely lost. What about the black and white ones?
The
right. Amalahu, and he answers them. Anochazinalahu dmidaiti. I see that when you have these black or white glazed kalim, they sweat on the outside from what they absorbed on the inside. The kibbutz midaiti vade bali. Therefore, since they're sweating out the stuff that they absorb from the outside, it must mean they absorbed it from the inside. Vafsidi. Therefore, they're osir. Now, why would they be osir? Why can't you kasher them? My time. Ha Torah he idal koy cheres. The Torah gives us edus about earthenware kalim she'ena yotim yedei dofnei la'olam, that whatever was absorbed into the walls of them never comes out. And this, where do we see that? The Torah tells us, for example, that a koy cheres that was used to cook. That was used to cook a chatas in, for example, has to be broken, because eventually what was absorbed into it from the chatas becomes noiser, and therefore you have to break it. You can't catch it.
What was the problem?
Eino yotze means no. If it's eino yotze, then it doesn't come back into the food. No, so actually what it means is eino yotze, it never fully comes out. Some of it will come into the food, slowly, but it'll never come out completely.
Some of it goes in, some of it goes out, because it's sweating also,
right,
but only a
right.
little bit.
Now, Tosfos points out, we could put it back into the furnace and rebake it, fine, but that's not considered kashering it, that's considered basically remaking it into a new keli. But as far as kashering it, it doesn't work, so that Marema is saying.
Some never comes out.
Right, so the question is, so my shnami, my yayin nesach. In that case, why is that different than yayin nesach? The darish lahu marema kulu moni de kunya shari. Because after all, marema said in the case of yayin nesach, regardless of the color, that's going to be the answer. But wait, we don't know. The Gemara didn't know that yet. When we asked the question, we didn't realize that point yet. V'chitema, so you might answer to say, okay, the obvious difference, chometz d'oraisa, yayin nesach d'rabbanon. Fine, the issue of chometz on Pesach is d'oraisa. The issue of yayin nesach is only d'rabbanon, when it's not real yayin nesach, when it wasn't actually, when they didn't actually pour it for Avodah Zarah, when it's just sam yayinim of goyim, is only d'rabbanon. And therefore, maybe we'll make a lot of d'rabbanon. Can't. We'll call the tokun rabbanon kain d'oraisa tokun. We know a general rule, when the chachamim make a takana, they usually make it as similar as possible to the parallel takana d'oraisa. So therefore, so in that case, the same dinim should apply by chometz and by yayin nesach. Well, I'm not understanding.
We say rabbanon is different than that act, though. Well, tzedukim is the same thing, though.
The tzedukim say we don't hold it of the rabbanon at all, but usually we say. I mean, we have.
We say one thing is rabbanon. If it's rabbanon, like it's more mekel.
Sometimes we do. We say when it comes to a suffix, for example, suffix d'oraisa l'chumra, suffix d'rabbanan b'chula. But we say, we're saying over here, as far as the strength of it, if we're going to say, if we're going to say that a certain kind of thing is also when it comes to chometz, we should say the same parallel case is also in something d'rabbanan. So why aren't we?
Because
the Torah gave, right.
Is that why the Gemara is saying Yai Netzach and not Samyana? Because it's parallel?
Because it's parallel, I guess, yeah. So the answer is, the difference is, as you said, Zetash Misha B'chamen and Zetash Misha B'tzainen. The difference is with chometz, it's used with hot foods, and therefore it absorbs more. With wine, it's only cold. So therefore it absorbs, but not so much that you can't kasher it. When the Torah talks about that Kloy Cheres can't be kashered, it's talking about, for example, a chatas was cooked in there, which is hot. So we don't have a source for saying that it should apply.
Does that apply to ceramics?
Ceramics are the same thing. It's Kloy Cheres, yes.
Cold, it wouldn't apply.
Cold, it wouldn't apply. So again, cold, you have milu v'irui, you have... Okay. Fine. The Gemara tells us, Rabbi Akiva ikla l'Ginzak. Rabbi Akiva one time visited Ginzak. Now, Ginzak is the name of a town someplace in Modai. Nowadays, it would be in Iran. Bo mine, and they asked him the following question. Mis'anin l'shois or ein mis'anin l'shois? Are you able to have a fast of only a few hours? So Rashi gives an example. Now, there's a lot of different explanations among the Rishonim what exactly this means. Rashi says that it means that, for example, you have the Rambam says somewhat similarly. Well, let's say a person didn't eat during the first half of the day, but it wasn't because of a tinnitus, because they were busy or whatever, and they didn't get around to eating. Then half the day has passed, and the person realizes, I didn't eat anything yet anyway. I may as well, the next half of the day, I'll keep as a tinnitus. Is such a thing valid? Can such a thing be considered a tinnitus? He hadn't eaten from the beginning of the day anyway. The question is, now he decides, I'm not going to eat anything the rest of the day. Does such a thing count as a tinnitus? He needs to have it in mind, maybe, before the tinnitus, yeah. That's what that was the question.
How many of you questions?
That was the question.
Why wouldn't it just explain it, say, the first half? Like, isn't a little bit of a stretch to say that explanation? Not just fasting and
so I think I think actually the Rambam understands it that way. The Rambam talks about in Hilchos Tainis the idea of Mesanin Lashois.
It just seems like a little stretch. Off
well, because the Gemara is going to give the halacha soon on it, and the halacha is the halacha on it is actually not so simple. What it means when we say Mesanin Lashois, what exactly again what the bottom line halacha is, what exactly how exactly it works or not. Is not such a simple thing. But yeah, if I remember correctly, the Rambam actually understands a tinnitus choice as something along those lines, that a person plans to fast just the first half of the day. The Alter Rebbe mentions it in Igeres HaTshuva also, that a person could fast until the middle of the day, and that can, and then the two of those count as one fast, and those eventually count up to the number of fasts. Voluntary fast, obviously. We're not talking about the ones that we're not talking about the only fast that arises is Yom Kippur. But we're not talking about the ones that are Bonon. We're not talking about Shiva, also the Tammuz, and Tisha B'Av and the rest of them. All right, so anyway, so the question was, can you do that? Why have a biyada? He didn't know the answer. They asked him another one, kankan, which is why it's relevant to our Gemara. Kankanim shall ozikachav masura no matorim. These barrels that belong to goyim, that they used for their wine, are they also umotor? What are the dinim as far as kashering them and as far as using them? And again, like have a biyada, and again, he didn't know the answer. And the third one they asked him is, b'mesh shimesh moshe kol shivas yimei miluim. What did Moshe, during the first 7 days of the miluim, when Moshe served in the Mishkan as Kohen Gadol, because Aaron and his sons were still in training, basically. He didn't wear the Bigzeh Kohona because the Bigzeh Kohona were meant for Aaron and his sons. Relative to them, it actually says Moshe is a Zor. So what did he wear? He didn't wear his regular clothes that he's wearing every day.
Even at that time, he was considered a Zor.
He's temporarily serving as Kohen Gadol, but yeah, he's still basically a Zor relative to the Bigzeh Kohona. And again, Lihava B'yada, and again he didn't know the answer. Now, this was saying that it was Rabbi Akiva, by the way. So the question is, Rabbi Akiva shouldn't know such things. So Tosfos says, Tosfos actually brings from this Gemara is also in Tainis, because there it has the thing about Nisan and Lashois, and Rashi says over there it can't be Rabbi Akiva. The Gusa has to be Mar Ukva. Rabbi Akiva shouldn't know such things. But Mar Ukva is an Amora. Fine, the Amorim didn't always know everything. But also Rashi says over there. That usually, if it really was Rabbi Akiva, we wouldn't have the Gemara wouldn't be phrasing it as an expression in Aramaic like this Ikla leGinza. You would have Toner Abanon Maisa Rabbi Akiva that he went to Ginza or whatever. Because it's unusual to say that Rabbi Akiva shouldn't.
If Rabbi Akiva doesn't know, who knows?
Nevertheless, it's odd that Rabbi Akiva shouldn't know any of these things. So Tosafot says, as far as the second point, that's not necessarily a big deal. Sometimes the Gemara does tell stories of Rabbi Akiva in the style. But as far as the first question, fine. So you have actually, so there is the Girsa Mar Ukva. However, I think Tosfos Rabbeinu Yochanan says, on the contrary, that you have, one of these questions about the Kankanim is in our Mishnah. If it's Mar Ukva, who's an Amora, the Amoraim is supposed to know all the Mishnayos. If it's Rabbi Akiva, it makes more sense. Okay, not all the Mishnayos were formulated yet in his times. So he may not have known. Okay. Anyway, what's the deal? Also Shaw Ben Medrasha. So Rabbi Akiva or Mar Ukva went and asked later on in the Beth Medrash.
I didn't see Rabbi Akiva going to the Beth Medrash and asking.
Why ever not? He had to learn. Like you just said, it shows his unable.
Maybe when he was young still.
It could be when he was younger, maybe, but okay, possible. All right. So when he went and asked, Amri, they told him like, Hilchasam is Anin L'Shoyz. Yes, the halacha is you can have a tainis choice. You can have a tainis choice. You can have a partial day fast. And again, yeah, the Rambam says that, yeah, it can mean that a person ate earlier in the day and then decides he wants to do the rest of the day as such a fast. The imhishlam mispal tchilas tainis. And if the person actually ends up finishing the whole day fasting, then he can say the tefillah of tainis. Namely, he says, aneinu.
Don't say aneinu in the morning.
No, you don't say aneinu in the morning. You say that the chazan says it in the morning, but we yichidim say it in the afternoon, and therefore if a person is doing a tainis yachid, you also only say it in the afternoon. But that's im hishlim. If he's going to be finishing up the tainis, then he says aneinu. Tosfos discusses, by the way, the issue. Usually when you accept a voluntary tainis, you're supposed to accept it ahead of time. You're supposed to verbally accept that I'm going to be fasting ahead of time. How is that working over here where you just decided in the middle of the day all of a sudden to fast?
How much ahead of time?
Usually you do it in mincha the day before. It's supposed to be. So Tosfos discusses that maybe, for example, what it means is that, yes, what he said is that the previous day he said he thought to himself, if tomorrow, I know tomorrow I'm going to be busy, if I don't end up eating by the middle of the day, then I'm accepting on myself that I'm going to plan to fast the rest of the day. So if he ends up eating in the morning, then he's not going to end up doing it. But this way, yeah. So that's one possibility. Another possibility, Tosfos says, is maybe you don't actually have to accept it. Just that if you didn't, then it's not really, you don't really get the full schar of doing the tainus. The neder is still a neder, but you don't get the full schar. The Rambam understands that it can mean as long as you accept it at some time before the tainus is chal, then it's good. So let's say a person did eat in the morning. Then he decides, you know what, the rest of the day from chatzos till the end of the day, I'm going to fast. Fine, as long as before chatzos, from chatzos till shkia, let's say. Fine, as long as before chatzos, as long as sometime in the morning, he accepts on himself, he verbally says, I'm going to be fasting the other half of the day, then that works.
What if he accepted a series of days?
Same idea. Okay, so then if he accepted a series of days, then I think if I remember correctly, you only need one Kabbalah for the series. I don't remember that, though.
Second half of the day is more Kiddush. To say that you can do that the second half of the day, that's more of a Kiddush. You'd eat in the morning and then...
Well, that's Adarama. That's Adarama. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so that's the answer to the first one. Number two, v'hilchos ha-kankanim shal ovdi kachavim lacha yud beis chodesh mutarin. As far as the second question about the barrels of goyim, the answer is, aside from the various things of discussing and how we could kasher it, the halacha is also you can leave them for 12 months, and then at that point they become mutar, because they become kosher automatically, because whatever was in them is completely dried out. And as far as the third question, Ramem Shimesh Moshe Shiva Simam Miluim, you're asking what did Moshe wear during the Shiva Simam Miluim? He served the Chaluk Lavan. He was wearing a long white shirt. In other words, not Bigda Kahuna, but on the other hand, not just his ordinary day-to-day clothing. Rav Kahana Masni B'Chaluk Lavan She'in B'Imra. Rav Kahana said specifically this was a Chaluk Lavan that had no Imra. An Imra means a border. An Imra means a border. So why didn't it have a border? The Rashi mentions an explanation.
Usually
an Imra in that sense would mean like a folded over hem. The Rashi explains you have a din when it comes to the person who's collecting the Truma Falishka, the person who's collecting who takes the money out of the chamber in the Mismikdash that they're going to be going and spending on the Korbanos and whatnot. Such a person is not allowed to wear something like that has a hem because we're concerned that people are going to be choshed that he took money out in the hem. So Rashi says maybe that Rashi brings an explanation that somebody said maybe the same thing is over here. Rashi says why?
You wouldn't see the money.
You wouldn't see it in the hem. It would be hidden. But Rashi says that's not logical. This is already after the malacha of the Mishkan is all done. Everything is already ready. There's no money lying around that anybody should suspect Moshe of taking. So Rashi doesn't elaborate why in that case it had to not have an Imra. So Tosfos mentions a few possibilities. One is that it didn't have an Imra, so that way it's more noticeable that it's new, because if you're going to be using it for the Avodah and the Mismikdash, it can't be something that before was used for ordinary use. So by not having an Imra, it showed more that it was new, so they made it different. Another explanation, Tosfos says, is that just the opposite. An Imra, a hem, and the edge of a garment makes it that it'll last longer, it won't unravel as easily. If you make it without a hem, it means that it will unravel much, much sooner. Therefore, that symbolized the idea, don't think that I'm supposed to be permanently Kohen Gadol, and then all of a sudden something went wrong, and now Aaron is going to be instead. No, you should realize to begin with that I'm only in this for a week. Therefore, we made it without an Imra. Then a third explanation Tosfos says is that Imra is the word Amra, which means wool. So Moshe, unlike the real Big Day Kahuna that we learned in this week's parasha, had both wool and linen in it. They had Kalayim. Moshe did not, because again, he wasn't really a Kohen. He was only doing it temporarily. Therefore, his only contained linen, no wool.
Wool was only specific to
the Big Day Kahuna, right, to the actual Big Day Kahuna. One more explanation that Ivan says is that they didn't have an Imra, is that it means it was woven all as one piece. Unlike most regular clothing, you have, you know, the body of it is made of one piece and the sleeves are made of other pieces of cloth and sewn on or whatever. Here it was sewn all as one thing.
Another reason we say that somebody didn't put his hands in your pocket.
What?
That
what?
Not a nice thing to
put your hands in your pockets. I don't know. It's a different thing. You have your hands close to, I don't know. But I don't know if that has to do with any of this. But,
Thank you.